Mormonism 101, a book by Mormonism Research Ministries' Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson, has helped many who want to understand what separates Mormonism from the Christian faith. Mormonism 101 is available at your favorite Christian bookstore or online at mrm.org. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue discussing the topic of polygamy as it was practiced in the early years of Mormonism during the time of the Nauvoo Settlement, Nauvoo, Illinois. We're going through a book, Saints, the Standard of Truth, a history book published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that we have said during this series, it's quite transparent in a lot of areas, including the subject of polygamy, though there's certainly much more that could be discussed on this topic. In yesterday's show, we were talking about the Partridge sisters, Emily and Eliza Partridge, and how they had been secretly married to Joseph Smith without Joseph Smith telling his wife Emma about that arrangement. Eventually, the book says, Emma kind of came around for a while and that she would be allowed to choose the plural wives that her husband would take, as it says on page 490, as long as she could choose them, and she had chosen Emily and Eliza, apparently unaware that Joseph had already been sealed to them. So Smith does not tell his own wife about this arrangement. We introduced a book called Mormon Enigma, which was written by two female Mormon authors. And that book tends to fill in a lot of the blanks that the book Saints certainly does not cover. But not only was Joseph Smith married to the Partridge sisters, there was another set of sisters that this book does not mention that were married to Joseph Smith around the same time. What does it say in Mormon Enigma?
It says, for 2 months, from March to May 1843, Joseph appears to have talked with Emma about plural marriage. There is no evidence that Emma ever opposed Joseph Smith on any doctrine but plural marriage. Convinced that it was necessary for her salvation and essential to their continued relationship, she may have decided to compromise with Joseph. In May 1843, she finally agreed to give Joseph other wives if she could choose them. Any of Joseph's other wives, who by now numbered at least 16, would have been more comfortable if they had Emma's approval. Emma chose the two sets of sisters then living in her house, Emily and Eliza Partridge, and Sarah and Maria Lawrence.
And Sarah and Maria Lawrence are not mentioned in this book, but this is another, as Eric has just explained, another set of sisters that Joseph Smith married. Now, this is supposed to make us feel a little bit better because Emma is the one granting the permission for him to marry these. But that's not going to change Emma's mind. She's still going to waffle back and forth on this whole issue. And I can only imagine what's going through her head as to what is my husband doing when he doesn't come home at night.
In Mormon Enigma, it continues on page 143, Joseph had finally converted Emma to plural marriage, but not so fully that he dared tell her he had married the Partridge sisters 2 months earlier. Emma said that, quote, to save family trouble, Brother Joseph thought it best to have another ceremony performed. And it goes on and says, how would Emma have explained the principles of plural marriage to young women who had been her wards over 2 years? Merely that it was a law of God that had to be fulfilled? Did she try to allay any feelings of guilt or sin? Did she explain that marriage as Joseph intended to be involved, conjugal relations? Was she aware of that herself? Unfortunately, no answers to these questions were recorded. One observation can be made. If Emma's explanations at that time differed from Joseph's earlier approach, neither Emily nor Eliza mentioned it. On May 23, 1843, Emma watched Judge James Adams, a high priest in the church who was visiting from Springfield, marry Joseph to Emily and Eliza Partridge in her home. Emily wrote, "We did not make much trouble, but were sealed in her presence." She noted, Emma was present. She gave her free and full consent.
This is May 23rd. Now, on page 491 of the book Saints, May 14th, talking about Hiram, Joseph Smith's brother again.
On May 14th, while Joseph was away at another conference, Hiram preached at the temple against men having more than one wife. Referring to Jacob's condemnation of unauthorized plural marriages in the Book of Mormon, Hiram called the practice an abomination before God.
Now, I want you to notice the date, folks. Now we're in May of 1843. Smith already has a number of plural wives, and yet his own brother is unaware that Joseph is participating in this practice. He's calling it still publicly an abomination before God. And what is he using as a support? The Book of Mormon, Jacob 2:27, which the book mentions earlier. Jacob 2:27 makes it very clear that God said, "There shall not any man among you have save it be one wife and concubines, he shall have none." So Hiram is using Jacob 2:27 as his proof text as to why plural marriage should be considered an abomination before God.
The Saints continues, after the sermon, Hiram began to question his own certainty about what he taught. Discussions about plural marriage swirled around Nauvoo, and rumors that Joseph had several wives were also common. Hiram wanted to believe this was not the case, but he wondered if Joseph was not telling him something. There had been times, after all, when Joseph had alluded to the practice, perhaps testing Hiram to see how he would react. And Hiram sensed that there were some things that Joseph told the 12 that he had not taught him.
Let me ask you, though, Eric. This is your brother. You're supposed to be close, we assume. And you are publicly denouncing this teaching that is based on rumors that, is, as the book says, are swirling around Nauvoo at this time. Wouldn't you think that Hiram would have confronted his brother on this and asked him point blank? Obviously, he did. I have to assume he did. Well, what did Joseph Smith say? He must have denied it. That's why Hiram keeps condemning it. He can't hear from his own brother up until this time that this was not something that he was doing, and it was not something that he was actually advocating.
Something that ought to be pointed out, too, is that he is accurately interpreting Jacob chapter 2. Imagine if he had used that with anybody who said polygamy was a good thing, including his brother Joseph. What would they have said against Jacob 2? Because it seems pretty clear-cut that polygamy was only available if seed needed to be raised up, and obviously it didn't seem like that was the case here in the Nauvoo society.
Well, when it says that he wondered if Joseph was not telling him something, I'm wondering if the wording in that paragraph is being as honest as it probably could be. But it goes on to say there had been times, after all, when Joseph had alluded to the practice, perhaps testing Hiram to see how he would react. You mean Hiram actually heard his brother alluding to this, but yet at the same time he's saying, no, he didn't practice that and he didn't teach it? This sounds a little bit confusing to me. But then in the last sentence of that paragraph on page 491, and Hiram sensed that there were some things that Joseph told the 12 that he had not taught him. So even though he's the prophet's brother, he seems to be out of the loop. But what happens after that?
One day after the sermon, Hiram saw Brigham near his home and asked if they could talk. Quote, "I know there is something or other which I do not understand that is revealed to the 12. Is this so?" The men sat down on a pile of fence rails. "I do not know anything about what you know," Brigham answered cautiously, "but I know what I know. I have mistrusted for a long time that Joseph had received a revelation that a man should have more than one wife," Hiram said. "I will tell you about this," Brigham said, "if you will swear with an uplifted hand before God that you will never say another word against Joseph and his doings and the doctrines he is preaching." Hiram stood up. "I will do it with all my heart," he said. "I want to know the truth." As Brigham taught him about the Lord's revelation to Joseph on plural marriage, Hiram wept, convinced that Joseph acted under commandment.
Now, I read this and I'm thinking, wait a minute. This is a guy who, according to the book, just a day before is calling the practice of plural marriage an abomination before God, and he's using Mormon scripture to support that position, Jacob 2:27. Yet he has a talk with Brigham Young, and Brigham Young is able to convince him, and we don't know what all Brigham Young said to him, but obviously he said enough that convinces Hiram that this is, in fact, a commandment from God and that Joseph was acting under that commandment. Did Brigham Young explain Jacob 2:27 to Hiram in a way that could convince him that that verse was being taken out of context?
I doubt anything was brought up about the Book of Mormon.
So it doesn't really matter then if that's the way it happened, if that was never discussed, if Brigham never gave a good explanation of what Jacob 2:27 is talking about. It seems like Hiram, who seems so vehement in his disdain for this teaching, can be convinced by Brigham Young in just one sit-down. That just seems so odd to me, that he would be that much against the practice of plural marriage, but yet Brigham is able to convince him that this was the Lord's revelation, and Hiram weeps. Now, when I first read Hiram wept, comma, I was thinking, you would think he would weep to find out that his brother was wrong. But no, he's convinced his brother must be right, and he's acting under a commandment from God himself. How easily swayed it appears that Hiram was when it comes to this doctrine that he thought was so repugnant just 24 hours earlier and made public 24 hours earlier.
The next paragraph on page 492 takes us to May 28th, 1843, where it says that Emma and Joseph were sealed together for eternity in a room above Joseph's door, solemnizing at last what they had long desired.
Now, this sentence, I think, is really misleading. If Emma ever intimated that this was something that she long desired, her actions seem to betray that up until this time, wouldn't you think? Now we're in late May. It's almost June of 1843. When it says, solemnizing at last what they had long desired, I've got to be honest, Eric, when I read that, I had to roll my eyes. Like, you've got to be kidding me. From what I understand regarding Emma's feelings towards this practice of plural marriage, I cannot imagine her having this long desire of wanting to be sealed for eternity to her husband Joseph. This idea of being sealed, whether it's for time or eternity, was causing a lot of problems for Emma in a number of different ways. So for her to be portrayed as having a long desire for this, what is long? What does that even mean?
Well, and according to Mormon Enigma, Emily says that Emma does not even like the marriage minutes after it took place with the Partridge sisters. In fact, it says, Emily wrote that Emma seemed to feel well until the ceremony was over. When almost before she could draw a second breath, she turned and was more bitter in her feelings than ever before, if possible. And before the day was over, she turned around and repented what she had done and kept Joseph up till very late in the night talking to him.
And think about this also when it goes back to that phrase, what they had long desired. Even if in Emma's mind the marriage was only for eternity, is Emma really open to the idea of sharing her husband throughout eternity if she doesn't want to share him through mortality? I would think eternity would be just as much problematic for her.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.